Now, these efforts to unite the nation weren't just symbolic, weren't just about words. The Soviet government and the Soviet party also took practical measures to strengthen popular support of the war effort. Expanding on efforts in the 1930s, for example, the church was in many ways rehabilitated, partly in return for supporting the war effort. Churches were reopened. Seminaries were reopened. The official atheist organization, the League of the Militant Godless, it was called, was closed. And in 1943, Stalin even agreed to the election of a new patriarch for the church, a post that had been restored in 1917. Remember, it had been gotten rid of by Peter the Great, but it essentially was soon suppressed and became inactive. Stalin restored it. Now, this rehabilitation of the church was directed especially at peasantry, the majority of the population, who in many ways were still quite religious. There were other efforts, but also to win more peasant support, the majority of the population, after all. In particular, peasants were given greater freedom to sell produce that was grown on their private plots. And indeed, as peasants enlarged their private plots without any official approval, the state looked the other way. Let them have more private agriculture, let them sell things on a unofficial free market. As a result, by 1944, half of all marketed produce in the Soviet Union came from private plots, a de facto decollectivization almost. Now, these measures, both in words and in emotions, but also practical measures, all played a part in mobilizing the nation against the German invasion. One last factor, though, has to be taken into account. And that's the behavior of the Nazis themselves during the war, which made all of this propaganda so plausible. When the German army invaded, in fact, many Soviet citizens, especially on the western frontiers, the western borderlands of the Soviet Union, actually welcomed the Germans as liberators. They were soon painfully disappointed. Instead of liberating peasants from collective farms, which is exactly what many, especially Ukrainian and Belarusian peasants, hoped. There were no collective farms in Germany, after all. Instead, the Nazis found the collective farms to be quite useful and used them as convenient structures for getting grain out of the Soviet Union. They also deported nearly 3 million civilians to slave labor camps in Germany. They deported Russians and Belarusians, and especially Ukrainians, who often most welcomed them. Millions of Jews, gypsies, communists, were executed on the spot or sent to German death camps. And partisans, of which there were many, when captured or even suspected of being partisans, were tortured to find out who else was a partisan. And when whole villages were believed to support these partisans, sometimes the population of an entire village was simply murdered and the village burnt to the ground. Now, these policies weren't just a mistake. They were part of expressed Nazi thinking about Russia and about Russians. The Nazis officially viewed Russians and other Slavs not as people to be liberated, as so many of them perhaps thought was going to happen, but as Untermenschen, as subhumans to be exploited in the interests of greater Germany. For example, Heinrich Himmler, who was head of the SS and in charge of the occupation of the Soviet Union, made this explicit in a speech in 1941. He said, "If 10,000 Russian females die of exhaustion digging an anti-tank ditch, this interests me only insofar as if the ditch is dug." The stated German war aim, in fact, in the East, was to create an agricultural colony that would serve the interests of the German fatherland. It was not to free Russians from tyranny. And not surprisingly, this sort of Nazi behavior contributed to the enthusiasm with which Russians fought during the war. Ultimately, I think it's this popular determination to resist the Nazis that was the decisive factor in Soviet victory. And the government and the party wisely associated it with this and encouraged this determination to fight the Nazis as a challenge to themselves as individuals, to their families, and to their nation. The significance of this went beyond the war. In the long run, as I've suggested, this a battle, the emotions behind it, the unity of the country did more to bolster the legitimacy and the popularity of the Soviet regime than anything before. It was now truly a national government. In the shorter term, though, the mobilization of this popular support to free Russia from Nazi threat carried great political risks of its own. The Soviet people expected that after the war, they would be rewarded for their support in this battle. And indeed, they thought they would be rewarded with a better life, in particular with continued relaxation of the pressures that had existed in the past. Less mobilization of society, less talk about building communism, less repression, less violence. Instead, once the victory came and the war ended, they got a powerful return to the harsh order of the Stalinist past. Necessary, the government felt, to rebuild Russia from the devastations of the war.